This is the most interesting part of this article. Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission released a rule book for the crypto industry last year, stating that retail investors can start trading crypto from June 1st.
What?
Bankless Nation, it is the first Friday of June. What time is it, David?
Ryan, it's the Bankless Friday Weekly Roll-Up, where we cover the entire weekly news in crypto, which is always an ambitious endeavor. There is so much to cover this week, which is why I'm talking so fast. I'm also, it's the morning time for me now, for the first time in 2 months, so I'm
Welcome
extra
back.
Caffeinated.
Welcome back to the coffee. East Coast. Yeah, it's great.
Well,
it's great
empty,
to have you.
Actually.
It's good to see that background again, David. I missed it. We're seeing kind of a, you know, a different background for the last week. I missed those bricks.
Yeah, the brick and the lighting and the good camera, it's all back. Everything's
Do you know,
back.
It's June, and last year, 16 days from now, Three Arrows Capital went bust. That's when we first found out about
really?
It.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, this is
fact.
Three Arrows Capital month. Last
this
month
is
was
a round.
Terra month, and this month is Three Arrows Capital month. Man.
Yep.
Man.
It, time flies, right? When you're having fun.
Yeah.
Are we having fun?
Little did we know we still had FTX ahead of us at this point. But actually, okay, well, that means that it's been roughly 1 year since Ether bottomed. It's been 1 year since the Ether bottom, in that case.
That's true.
Yeah.
About 1 year since the Ether bottom. We're going to talk about that then. Also, a few topics of the week. Did China just do a 180 on crypto?
Did you read about this?
I just started to, and I want to get your take on it, but I feel like no one is talking about it, and we're going to talk about it. What else we got to cover?
We got this Celsius endgame. So if you are a Celsius creditor or you're interested about the state of Celsius creditors, hi, Ryan, you're going to find out exactly how much money you're going to get. And if you are over $5,000 of a Celsius creditor, you're going to get something else.
I'm prepared to be disappointed.
Yeah, definitely hold your breath on that one. WorldCoin raising $110 million, $115 divides the crypto industry, continues to be polarizing. And then also the secret to winning the bear market. We got a take from Kobe at the end here.
All right. Before we get in, David, we've got a special word from our friends and sponsors. Do you want to add some more excitement to your life? Your staking life, that is? You can add excitement to the staking routine of ETH using the Asymmetrics protocol. What is this thing, David?
So for those that are familiar with Pool Together, Asymmetrics is like Pool Together, but for ETH staking. And so you stake your Ether, and then instead of giving a just boring 4.55%, you get anywhere between zero and 1,000%. And it could be anyone. Probably going to be zero, might be 1,000%. And so this is what we call a prize linked savings account. And so all of the yield gets pooled up, and then one lucky winner gets everyone's yield, and everyone else gets zero. 0% yield. And so if you would like to add a little excitement to your ETH staking, Asymmetrics is for you. Bankless.cc/Asymmetrics. You also can follow them on Twitter, Asymmetrics_ETH on Twitter.
Look at this. Almost 7 ETH that you could just get.
Right.
On the daily right now. Mm-hmm. That's the current reward pool. Kind of fun, right?
Yeah. So only 234 users are competing for that 7 ETH. So like this actually, I believe there's also like an extra little incentive. So you actually technically get more yield if you like net everything out with Asymmetrics. You just have to be ready to get 0% for a while, or maybe 1,000.
you don't know until you try.
You don't know.
Yeah, you can try your luck here. Okay, let's get to the markets though. Bitcoin price, what are we at on the week?
Call it a flat week, up 0.5% on the week. Started at 26,700, ending at 26,900.
All right. How about Ether?
Actually, up 2.5%. So Ether is up on the week. Started at 1820. We are up to 1865.
And the ratio, ETH
Bitcoin. We actually got pretty high up on Ether this last week. Oh, yeah,
should we talk about that?
Yeah,
what's the spike? What's this green candle here?
Yeah,
when was that?
I think that was when the debt ceiling got raised.
The 29th.
Yeah, so coupled to trad markets. But still, slowly positive, optimistic trajectory lately on Ether, 2.5% Ether BTC ratio. Looking really good if you are directionally long Ether, like I am, at 0.0692. So
wow.
happy ratio.
That's a pretty big ratio gain in the month of May.
The ratio is up only in May, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Like I'm zooming out on the, by the way, on the Kraken Pro charts, which lets you do this. Very nice. I can see the ratio over time. Yes. Okay. So we're back around the April, like mid April, but you're right. After a dip, you know, at the end of April where we've been up, up only in May for the ratio. Up so go ETH.
Total crypto market cap $1.17 trillion. Pretty flat.
David, give us some stablecoin numbers too.
Down, Ryan. Down. Stablecoin numbers. Okay, so 12-month change in stablecoin supply. It's bad. $162 billion down to $126 billion. Year-to-date change since 2023. $139 billion.
The total amount of stablecoins that have been issued. So it's like kind of market cap of stablecoins, which is a great usage metric for stablecoins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the stablecoin supply in crypto is our liquidity. So it's a very base. It's important to see where stablecoins are going. Seeing them go down is bad because that means there is less liquidity in the system. Interestingly, though, Tether is at an all-time high. So Tether, the year-to-date of Tether started at $70 billion, is currently at $83 billion, surpassing its all-time high. 12 months ago, it was at $83 billion. Then Three Arrows Capital got liquidated. It started to trend downwards. But now Tether has resumed all-time high. So for a while, USDC was looking real good against Tether, gaining a lot of market share. Lately, ever since a year ago, and especially after the banking crisis, USDC is had some headwinds and Tether has gotten some tailwinds.
Look at this chart. So I have a take on this. You know, last bear market, stablecoin supply actually grew a bunch. So look at this.
Much.
This is
my
Tether.
My God, that is gargantuan.
Yeah, 2019 versus 2021. In fact, it grew primarily during the bear
market. Okay, so looking at 2020,
market.
We were at like $5 billion of Tether supply.
Yeah.
2020. Fast forward to 2022, touching $85 billion.
Right.
That
so
is
that's
some
been
growth.
Up. But you know what's interesting is why this decrease. One explanation for this is T-bills, treasuries, are actually the best yield farm out there right now. And that is outside of DeFi.
Right.
It, in the last bear market, with interest rates, Fed interest rates at 0% or close to 0%, very low, let's just say, DeFi interest offered the best yield on your dollar. Is no longer the case. Although, here's a take. Maker is trying. Mm-hmm. The Maker DAO is mulling a proposal to boost the DAI savings rate to 3.3%.
God, when's the last time you heard the DAI savings rate? It's been a while.
Probably 2020. Mm-hmm. I haven't even thought about it since 2020.
I used to consider the DAI savings rate as like the binary star system between the ETH stake rate and the DAI savings rate. This is when DAI was like the only meaningfully like decentralized stablecoin on Ethereum. And then it's been at zero for a very long time, or at 1% as of recently. But this is 3.3% is not small. That's a decent chunk of MakerDAO revenue going into the DAI savings rate. Implied that will increase the supply of DAI in the market.
That's the aim. And by the way, making them more competitive with basically T-bills, with treasuries out there, which are about 5%, something like this. So crypto creeping up there. It's a nice equilibrium. Let's talk about ETH staking, though. What is this chart from Hildabi?
Yeah, this is crazy. Okay, 17.4% of all staked Ether was deposited last month, in the month of May.
Wow.
That is significant.
17.4% of the total ETH stakes happened in May.
Including the deposit queue, which is a one-way queue into the Beacon chain.
That's crazy.
Yes.
I mean, this is much more than I thought.
Yes. Yeah. In the same way, this kind of feels like post EIP 1559, it ended up burning way more ether than people thought.
Yeah.
Same thing's happening with staking. It's like, man, people are staking way more than we thought that they would.
Anytime you say ETH burn rate, you know, I got to open up ultrasound money.
It's been at least 2 weeks since we've opened up ultrasound money. We'll do for
man, look at this. Look at
this. Down
this
only.
Is beautiful.
Down only
ETH supply. We are
negative 275,000 ether since the merge.
Damn. There you
win
go.
Win 1 million.
Tell me about the Ethereum validator queue, though. It's an interesting story.
Speaking of all-time highs, the wait to be on the Beacon chain for a validator is at all-time high. 38 days. So if you deposit 32 Ether, you got to wait 38 days.
The world's most popular club. You can't get in. You got to wait 38 days. Everyone wants to get in.
The exit time is 0 minutes.
Zero minutes?
You are free to leave.
Anytime. It was happy hour in there, so you know everyone's trying to get in. Total MEV distributed to validators. Here's an interesting stat on its own. 200K ETH distributed to validators of MEV. What does this tell us?
So MEV, this also includes tips. So in just anything above base fee is what we're looking at. So 200,000 Ether was distributed to Ether stakers. Cumulatively, total since proof of stake has launched. So Ether stakers have received, spenders have been sent 200,000 Ether to savers. This is why Ether is great savings technology. And this is a meme I am just technology. Ripping from the hands of Bitcoiners who say BTC is great savings technology.
Yeah.
Staked Ether is the best savings technology of all time. And what we're seeing here is we're seeing spenders, short people with short time preferences, giving their time preference to people with long-term time preferences, the ETH stakers.
See, guys, what you don't know about David is he is actually a hardcore Bitcoiner.
Yeah.
He just substitutes the word Bitcoin for Ether, yes. And it's the same exact thing.
Except it works way better. Dude, Bitcoiners have always been right, except they just chose the wrong chain.
All right. For the bankless maximalists out there, though, of which both Hello. You and I consider ourselves, we uh-huh. want maximally bankless things. This was a great headline and story coming out of Decrypt this week. Ethereum and Bitcoin balances on exchange edge towards a 5-year low. What?
Wow.
So take a look at this.
Wow.
The amount for Ether, anyway, there's now 18 million ETH. Ether on exchanges. That represents 15%. Did you know, though, in the summer of 2020, it was 30%.
Nice.
So we have about half of the amount of ETH on exchanges in custodial systems than we did in 2020, 3 years ago.
I love
this. This is great. This means more people are going bankless. More mm-hmm. people are taking custody of their private keys and getting it off of custodial solutions. Very, very bullish on this metric.
So we should ask, why is this happening? What's going on here? Why are so many people going bankless? This trend definitely started with post-FTX. Everyone who's been on a centralized exchange has been like, you know, I'm going to try out that self-custody thing. So even there's been outflows of free ETH from even all the good exchanges like Coinbase and Kraken, right? So that's going into people's self-custody, however they want to do that. There's also regulatory fears. And so if the choke point is like, you know what, I don't want to get choked out. I'm going to do the self-custody thing first. And then also there's the Beacon chain, which is sucking up all the ether, which requires self-custody, kind of, mostly, most of the time, some of the time. And interestingly enough, hardware wallet sales are also up only as well. Hmm. And so there's just all of this demand. And also at the same time, versus 2020, DeFi, as like a utility is way better than it's ever been. Like the utility of being bankless is up. So as the industry has developed, the reasons to self-custody has also increased.
Another one of the most bullish things going on that no one's talking about because it's a bear market and we don't like good news, except we do on bankless. I'm always down for some good news. Cyrus Unesi had a really good take, I think, on the current state of the NFT market. Why don't you give us the TLDR?
The NFT market is garbage and going to zero, and retail hates JPEGs, and crypto Twitter hates all coins with pictures. He's being hyperbolic here. And then he follows up and says, here are a few reasons why I haven't dumped my NFTs because of this. First, I still like my JPEGs more than I ever liked true altcoins. The art is worth more to me than looking at XRP or IOTA balance on a block explorer. He's just picking out like shitcoins, basically, picking on them. The market caps of these NFTs are extremely tiny now. A one ETH floor translates to a $20 million market cap. That depends, of course, on the supply of the NFT, but generally speaking, the 10,000 PFP is like kind of the standard. Even at the depths of the 2019 bear market, giant scams still maintained higher market caps than this. $20 million market cap is insanely small. NFTs are structurally underinvested in because people don't understand them yet. Blue chips like Punks and Apes are sitting at a $1 billion market cap. Which $1 billion coins have more staying power and brand value and utility and fundamentals than Punks? I'll wait. Memes are still extremely popular. People have quit buying them, but they can't quit talking about them. There's something about JPEGs that gnaws at you. They don't disappear the way Neo, IOTA, and AVAX did. Can it really go down another 90% from here? Don't answer that. I'm fairly certain someone will come along and buy this stuff soon. Why? Because mixing gambling and art is a new cultural phenomenon. I think it's a great series, like line of thought. Like, I think don't overthink NFTs. They were a big bubble, and they were this first big bubble. And like, just like, let's be like stupid simple.
Isn't
here.
Isn't he just saying basically NFTs are better meme coins than meme coins?
Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah,
there you go. That's what it is.
And they're going to pump again for the same reason they pumped in the first time. And I think like low, like illiquid, low cap NFTs are like a great place to place your bets in this bear market.
One thing I see Cyrus is saying though is the blue chip ones in particular. Those are the ones that are kind of like surviving, right? And there's definitely going to be some up and comers, but definitely there's going to be the vast majority of NFTs that are going to go to zero or close to zero, right?
Yes. Yeah. I think the game is to pick your bets, place your chips as to which ones you think are underpriced, low priced, but still being like circulating around on crypto Twitter.
You're betting on culture, aren't you?
Yeah.
You just make these cultural bets.
Cough, MFers.
Stop shilling your bag, sir. I don't even know. I might own an MFer. Yes,
yeah,
I
you
did
have one. Yeah, you have one.
You convinced me to buy one. Yeah. Uh-huh. God only knows what that's priced at right now. I'm sure it's
about
close to zero.
About one ETH?
All right.
Yeah. See, it's not at zero. It's like,
no,
if it's
no, that's
at
not
zero,
too bad.
Yeah.
That's about what I bought it for, I think, something like this. All right, Dave, we've got some stuff coming up. What do we have coming up?
Coming up next, we're going to talk about China's potential 180 on crypto, which might be the most bullish news I've ever heard ever, and no one's talking about it. Are people not talking about it for good reason or not? We don't really know. The Celsius deal gets inked. So what you need to know, especially as a Celsius creditor. And then also, is this the darkest winter cryptos ever had? We discuss. But first, I want to talk about these fantastic sponsors that make the show possible, especially Kraken, our preferred exchange for 2023. If you have not tried out Kraken or all of the beautiful charts that we talk about every single weekly roll-up, go try it out right now. Kraken Pro has easily become the best crypto trading platform in the industry. The place I use to check the charts and the crypto prices, even when I'm not looking to place a trade. On Kraken Pro, you'll have access to advanced charting tools, real-time market data, and lightning-fast trade execution, all inside their spiffy new modular interface. Kraken's new customizable modular layout lets you tailor your trading experience to suit your needs. Pick and choose your favorite modules and place them anywhere you want in your screen. With Kraken Pro, you have that power. Whether you are a seasoned pro or just starting out, join thousands of traders who trust Kraken Pro for their crypto trading needs. Visit pro.kraken.com to get started today. Introducing ETHX from Stater. ETHX is a liquid staking token designed to maximize rewards, all while securing Ethereum. With Stater, you can run an Ethereum node with just 4 ETH, an 85% lower capital requirement versus the 32 ETH required for solo staking. With Stater's 4 ETH nodes, you can get a 35% average higher yield, since you charge fees to those who use your node to stake their ETH. By running a node with Stater, the ETHX staking derivative token can get minted on your validators and can flow into the world of DeFi, which Stater is actively building integration and partnerships into to increase the utility of ETHX. Stater allows for both permissioned and permissionless nodes to join the network, maximizing its potential scalability for ETHX while preserving the values of decentralization and openness behind its liquid staking token. Go to staterlabs.com/ETH and sign up to get access to the Stater staking protocol.
Is China warming up to crypto? That is the question right now. Here's a headline. Beijing releases white paper for Web3 innovation and development. This is coming straight from Beijing. A Web3 innovation and development white paper? We're not seeing these kinds of white papers being written by the White House these days. Tell us, what's going on?
So this white paper, which I'm trying to figure out the significance of the Beijing Municipal Science and Technology Commission, which released this white paper. I'm not a China expert at all. So I have no idea how this institution scales in the world of like authorities in China. Anyways, the document states that Web3 technology is an inevitable trend for future internet industry development. The commission aims to construct Beijing as a global innovation hub for the digital economy. To that end, Beijing's Chaoyang district will spend at least 100 million yuan, $14 million, every single year until 2025. Not that much money, but still it's more than zero. This got on CZ's radar, who gave a take. Interesting timing on this Web3 white paper, he says. Not sure of the authenticity. Lots of talks about NFTs, VR, AI, metaverse, etc. Looks like ByteDance, JD, and Baidu each have their sections. Gavin Wood and Beeple were mentioned. Web3.
Beeple was mentioned?
Place. Yeah.
Gavin Wood?
Right? Yeah.
Look, someone actually printed this out, too. It's an actual printout of the white paper in paper form. Imagine that.
And so this is the most interesting part of this article, this white paper, to me. Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission released a rule book for the crypto industry last year stating that retail investors can start trading crypto from June 1st. What? Okay, first,
Hong Kong,
Hong Kong, not China, which is an important difference.
Okay.
Although... Valence, strong
Although,
valence.
Is it an important difference? Yes. No. It almost seems like the experimental zone for the rest of China, financial experimental zone. But go on. This is the Securities and Futures Commission. So is that like the equivalent of the if the SEC SEC and CFTC combined. That's what
inside of Hong Kong. Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. Go ahead.
Stated that retail investors can start trading crypto from June 1. So first off, congrats to Hong Kong for getting rules. Really happy for you guys. if this was mainland China, this would be massive. Hong Kong's a great pigeonhole, great foothold, great beachhead for the rest of China. But retail investors can start trading crypto. Wow. That's just fantastic. This is great.
This is there was also a segment, I guess, on TV in China. Mm-hmm. So from the China Central Television, CZ called the Chinese community buzzing after Bitcoin was seen on TV in a segment. And of course, this is pretty tightly controlled state media. So very intentional to choose to show Bitcoin or not. And this is like buy Bitcoin, withdraw cash, redeem.
Yeah.
I don't know, again, what all of this means, David. It's difficult to parse, but there seems to be a warming to crypto in China.
We in the West are still trying to figure this out because we don't know how big of a deal this agency is. The segment that you're talking about is actually taken down. So it's taken down retrospectively.
Okay. Well, that's not great.
So others have said, Wu Blockchain, his tweets, this is an unimportant government department in Beijing. And it is just deliberately exaggerating emotions. It focuses on the AI and metaverse, while the Chinese government is nothing supportive of crypto. So some people are saying it's a nothing burger. I am in a couple chats asking some Chinese friends and other people's opinions about, like, yo, what's the deal here? Like, how legit is this? And there is contention. No one can come to consensus on this.
Oh, really? Some people are saying, hey, it's a big deal. Others are saying it's not a big deal at all.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's kind of the question. I guess maybe that's the measured take. Mm-hmm. But China really, I think, has been an enigma on crypto.
Yeah. Yeah.
So very difficult to discern. But I guess one take on this is, I think whenever you see, so China and the U.S., of course, are economic rivals in many different ways, it seems like increasingly. If China, if the U.S. goes hard on, like, banning crypto, negative on crypto, I think China will in turn support crypto. Right. Like, if the U.S. zigs, China's going to zag.
Take the other opposite end of the stick, yeah. Uh-huh.
Right, which is probably long-term bullish.
Good for crypto.
Yeah. Now, on the back of this, even in Hong Kong, I don't see, like, a whole bunch of crypto projects being like, all right, cool, Hong Kong, we're moving to Hong Kong, let's do it.
Right?
And so until I see that sort of skin in the game and stake, I think the market will be pretty undecided as to whether China is actually warming to crypto or whether this is just a flash in the pan. And the thing is, I feel like China has changed its mind on crypto so many different times.
So, like, if China came in and said, we are so bullish on crypto, like, we're going to allow everyone to do anything, and that would be really bullish for a moment, and then they could completely change their mind, as they have already done five times over the next year. And so, like, even if we got the most bullish news possible out of China, like, no one would be like, okay, but are you serious though? Because, like, we don't really know.
So mixed review on this news, but probably more positive than certainly negative, right?
Trending in the right direction.
Worst case, it's a nothing burger, but there could be something here. Tell me about end game.
That is correct. That it is not bearish. If there's anything we know, it is not bearish.
There we go. Tell me about the end game for Celsius, though, David. You promised. Am I going to get any heat out of this account?
Are you ready for this headline, Ryan?
I don't know. I'll brace myself.
Fahrenheit wins bid to acquire assets of insolving crypto lenders. Celsius.
Are AIs writing these CoinDesk articles now?
Crypto consortium Fahrenheit has won a bid to acquire the insolvent lender Celsius Network, whose assets were previously valued at around $2 billion.
Oh, okay. I thought they got this wrong. I thought they converted Celsius to Fahrenheit. No. But Fahrenheit is the winner of the bid.
A crypto consortium called Fahrenheit has purchased Celsius. Yeah.
Well,
so
my apologies,
Freedom
CoinDesk.
Units taking the victory here. So the group will acquire Celsius' institutional loan portfolio, staked cryptocurrencies, mining unit, and additional alternative investments. So the plan proposes that all of Celsius' assets, except liquid cryptocurrencies, will be transferred to a newly formed company, NewCo. And so here's the deal. Here's the deal. Are you ready for Ryan?
I'm ready.
What you're going to get.
Do I get anything?
If your Celsius bag is more than $5,000, you will get a small distribution and become a shareholder in this new company, which is going to have some private equity, some mining assets, etc.
It's a little bit more. It's a little bit more than $5,000. So that's what I get, huh?
Oh, yes. Yes, perhaps. Okay. And so What does Celsius currently have to give all these new shareholders of this new company? Mm-hmm. They have some DeFi crypto assets. They have a loan book portfolio, PE and VC investments, liquid cryptocurrency, about $500 million, and also mining assets, because Celsius wanted to buy Bitcoin miners because they thought that was a good thing to do with the money. So this new plan proposes that all of these, except the liquid crypto assets, will go into newly formed company, NewCo. 100% of the equity in this new company will go to the creditors that are owed more than $5,000 pro rata. Those owed less than $5,000 will get 70 cents on the dollar their claims and equity.
If you are a Celsius holder, it's a totally different deal if you have $5,000 or less. If you have less than $5,000, I should say, then you just get 70%.
Right.
So you get a 30% haircut and you get 70% and no equity. If you have more than $5,000, you get this NewCo equity.
If they're depending on how they're marking this, like $5,000, say you have Ether in Celsius and Celsius goes insolvent, that Ether was priced higher.
Yeah.
So like 70% on your dollar for a forced hold of Ether for that amount of time.
I didn't
might
think
actually
about that.
Like play out
if it's marked to market at the
if
time.
If it's marked to market,
which
yeah.
I
if
think
in dollar, I don't know how they're doing that.
I don't know that detail. Mm-hmm. That'd be a good question. 70% on the dollar for the claims and no equity. Yeah, it depends on what the value of the Ether was at the time. Certainly. Yeah.
Okay, so if you are a creditor above $5,000, you should not expect to see much returns after you get all the deductions. So you get the distribution of the liquid crypto assets that is left after they pay out the sub 5,000 people. Any share of the monies that Celsius gets from suing Mashinsky, so that's fun. And then you also get the share of this new company equity. You are
Mashinsky
not getting...
has no money. Come on. You're not going to get anything.
No, he cashed out a lot of money.
Oh, really?
He cashed out hundreds of millions, him and his wife.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Along with all the other executives.
Let's get that back.
Yes, yeah, big clawbacks.
All right.
Big clawbacks.
All right.
I mean, I don't know how much that's going to translate.
It's revenge equity, then.
Revenge
I'll take
equity,
some of that.
Yeah. Okay, so there are new managers and investors also that need to be paid. So $35 million per year salary to be paid to the management team of this new company.
So who are these guys? That's my big question.
The Fahrenheit team. They will be who will be putting $50 million of their own money to buy the shares of this new company. Their equity is subjected to a two-year lockup that they can sell up to 30% of their equity after 1 year. If Celsius equity trades at 150% of net asset value, after 1 year, the Fahrenheit team has the option to dump on you if Celsius equity tokens increase in value. The Fahrenheit can sell in 1 year if the value of this new equity token goes up by 50%.
What are they going to do? What's their business? Are they going to take in more?
It's like private equity, right? They're just going to take it, reshuffle it, try and rebuild it. I don't know.
What do you
rebuild? Same thing was going on with FTX 2.0 right now. It's like they're also trying to restart that exchange.
Yeah, I'm not bullish on this equity. I'd rather get 70% of my money back right now,
I take it you had more than $5,000 in Celsius.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, not much more, but like, yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't love this. I don't know the new managers. Schmaminsky is going to be the manager. I mean, if they're anything like the old managers, like, come on. Right. This doesn't help.
Well, hey, if you have enough money to buy a company like this to make a bid in this state of the market, you got to be doing something not terrible.
But that's hopeful. Fahrenheit. All right. So we're...
Fahrenheit. Freedom
outside
units.
Outside of the...
Freedom units.
Is that what they're called? Freedom units?
Fahrenheit. Yeah.
Oh,
Freedom
my
units.
God. You're making a joke about the Fahrenheit system rather than the metric system. All
exactly.
right.
Exactly.
Yeah. I thought that was the token. They're called, like, Freedom units. It wouldn't surprise me. All right, David. Well, let's... move on from Celsius. I'm going to leave that in the distant past here. I want to talk about where we are today in the crypto market right now. And this is a question for the OGs. Is this crypto winter darker than the last? What inspired this question for me was I saw this tweet from Icebergy, who said, every chat I'm in is super depressed about the current state of crypto. I don't know what chats this individual is in. They look like kind of a dev angel investor focused on crypto, NFTs, and Bitcoin. So probably a crypto trader type, but definitely follows price as closely as we do. So that kind of begged the question to me, is this crypto winter darker than the last one? And I put out a question to the OGs. I got a bunch of fantastic responses. Maybe I'll read a couple and then I'll get your way in. So Dan McArdle says, no, not at all. In 2011, and by the way, Dan's been through about all of these. In 2011, -94%. He's talking about, I think he's talking about Bitcoin price primarily, yeah, so not right. full crypto market cap. So 2011 was -94%. It was easy to fear. It was done for decades. Crypto was done for decades. 2015, we got a -87%. That was the bear market there. 2019, -84%. That was the last one. But digital gold had caught on. The beginnings of DeFi were apparent. 2023, we're only down 78%. Centralized stuff failed. Oh, well, every other bear market was worse. So Dan's take was every other bear market was worse. And he brought some data points objectively. Rather than 2011, -94%, 2019, -84%, Bitcoin at least is only -8%. So that's a take. Brantley.eth says, not even close. Crypto is an order of magnitude bigger, more developed, better funded now, and has a far lower chance of total failure at this point. DC Investor says, no, because we are not dealing with existential crisis. But we got big enough this time where mainstream questions the value prop like the natives last time. A lot of responses to this. Mm-hmm. From what I could tell, most of the OGs, here's Anthony Sassano, says, not even close. Last bear market, people were questioning if crypto would even survive. This bear market, there's more genuine, actual long-term focus building going on than I've ever seen before. Most of the OGs are saying, no, it's not worse. Do you concur? What's your take on this question?
I think there's two sides of this conversation. I think almost by definition, OGs who have seen two bull markets, so that's you, that's me, that's Sazano, that's a number of these people here, by definition, like, it's not as bad for them because A, one, they've done it before, and B, they bought in at like 10x lower prices to begin with. So for them specifically, it's not as bad because they're just in a little bit more of a cushy position. I think the first, everyone's first bear market
feels the same.
Stresses them out in unique and different and unique ways, and that is always going to be the same. Everyone's first bear market, their conviction is going to be tested. Last bear market, we had certain challenges that we do not have this time, and this bear market, we have new challenges that we did not have last time. Last time, Ethereum funding was about to go to zero, and we were about to like have to pause development to figure that out. Right? We legitimately had no use cases on the app layer. Like, why Ethereum inspired me in 2017 to 2018? I can't remember. It was just like the vision. I guess I was around. Yeah, the hope for that it could be something. Reed did not have the regulatory oversight and like Gary Gensler and Chokepoint 2.0. So that is the new challenge, and that is what these current. People who are going through this bear market are questioning themselves about, not about like what's the utility, et cetera, et cetera. And so, yes, every single bear market is the stress from every single bear market for every single new cycler is always valid and unique. And I would also agree that, yes, these challenges are different and perhaps easier, but they are still extremely like tough challenges. So I'm a little bit on both sides.
What's kind of interesting is this is sort of almost a bear market defined by a negative regulatory reaction, negative nation state reaction to crypto. And that just means we're there. Like, we're at the end of the level. This is round one of the boss fight, right? And like, we're fighting the final boss. This won't be the only battle. I think the final boss will take multiple forms, but like, that's how far we've actually come. And if you had told me in 2019 that the 2023 bear market would go down to just less than $1 trillion. Mm-hmm. I'd be like, bear market? Wait, what?
But that's because you're, that's just because of when you got in though. Yes. It's just like the where your disposition as a result of the place that you started in the crypto industry.
I guess what I'm saying is objectively at $1 trillion, right, we got some punch. There's something here in crypto, and that means something. But I totally acknowledge that everyone's bear market probably feels just about the same. So if this is your first time, it probably feels like the first time comparably to an OG. But that's why I do think OGs can kind of take the perspective a little bit. They have a valuable perspective in that they can say objectively, rather than my own feelings, objectively, is this a harder bear market than previous? And they're saying, anyway, it's not worse than the last one.
Right. The threat of crypto not coming back is completely gone in my mind. And that is the big difference.
David, what do we have coming up next?
Coming up next, Blend, Blur's new NFT lending platform, is putting in numbers. We got the WorldCoin race to talk about, USDC natively on Arbitrum. We got some MoonPay executives pocketing $150 million before shuttering the company. Oof. And so much more to talk about. But first, a moment to talk about these fantastic sponsors, especially MetaMask and MetaMask Learn, to learn about all of the crazy crypto jargon that Ryan and I sometimes use without explaining ourselves. So if we do that, sorry. But also, MetaMask Learn has a product to learn all about that. So let's go hear from them right now. Learning about crypto is hard. Until now. Introducing MetaMask Learn, an open educational platform about crypto, Web3, self-custody, wallet management, and all the other topics needed to onboard people into this crazy world of crypto. MetaMask Learn is an interactive platform with each lesson offering a simulation for the task at hand, giving you actual, practical experience for navigating Web3. The purpose of MetaMask Learn is to teach people the basics of self-custody and wallet security in a safe environment. And while MetaMask Learn always takes the time to define Web3-specific vocabulary, it is still a jargon-free experience for the crypto-curious user. Friendly, not scary. MetaMask Learn is available in 10 languages with more to be added soon, and it's meant to cater to a global Web3 audience. So, are you tired of having to explain crypto concepts to your friends? Go to learn.metamask.io and add MetaMask Learn to your guides to get onboarded into the world of Web3. Mantle is a brand new high-performance Ethereum Layer 2 network, built differently from the other Layer 2s you may be familiar with. Mantle is a modular Layer 2, built on the OP stack, but uses EigenLayer's data availability solution instead of the expensive Ethereum Layer 1. Not only does this reduce Mantle's gas fees by 80% compared to other Layer 2s, but it also reduces gas fee volatility. Mantle has a decentralized sequencer set, eliminating the risk of downtime and censorship on the network. And because Mantle implements multi-party computation nodes, Layer 1 settlement execution is shortened from 7 days to as low as just one or two. Mantle is the first Layer 2 built by a DAO and is backed by one of the biggest DAO treasuries in the world, BitDAO. Mantle already has sub-communities from around Web3 onboarded to help the growth of Mantle, like Game 7 for Web3 gaming, or EduDAO for the world of DeSci, and Bybit for TVL, liquidity, and on-ramps. Check out Mantle at mantle.xyz and follow them on Twitter at 0xmantle. Blend, Blur's NFT lending platform, has put in some absolute numbers. Loan volumes of $308 million in the past 22 days. Why 22? Because it launched 22 days ago. So in addition to the NFT trading platform that we all know as Blur, their Blend platform is doing something like 20 to 30% of the total platform's revenue. So Azuki's amassed 70,000 Ether in loan volume, coming from 6,500 loans, coming in at number one in the preferred NFT borrowing collection on Blend. CryptoPunks coming in at 35,000 ETH in loan volume. Milady is coming in at 22,500. So we all knew that NFTFi was a thing, but Blend from Blur has just like dropped an absolute cannonball in the world of NFT finance.
This has just exploded. So 82% of the NFT lending market. Can you just explain, what is an NFT loan, David?
Yeah, so you put up your NFT as collateral and then you loan some money.
You take it to the pawn shop, basically.
Yep.
Take it to the pawn shop.
You pay back your Ether, your USDC. I'm assuming this is all Ether. And then you get your NFT back. Or you don't, and you get liquidated, and somebody buys your NFT as a, it's like a put on the NFT.
Wow. So this is could cause some tears if NFTs go up again and somebody, you know, pawned it off and sold the bottom effectively. That's very interesting, though. It's good to see NFTFi taking off. Tell me about the Coinbase wallet, David.
Yeah, so Coinbase Wallet has introduced gas-free USDC transactions on Polygon. So you can send USDC on Polygon using the Coinbase Wallet for free. Coinbase will cover your gas fees. I was wondering what the mechanism behind this. And so this is actually using EIP 3009, which is a account in the account abstraction category. So it's using this EIP 3009 transfer with authorization. It's a meta transaction, which is, again, part of the whole account abstraction thing. And so Coinbase just relays the transaction, pays the Matic gas fee, and you get free USDC transfers on Polygon. I think like this is a cool marginal improvement for a narrow use case, which is USDC in Coinbase Wallet on Polygon. But I think why this is a big deal is that it extrapolates very, very well. As soon as EIP 4844 comes, dank sharding and gas fees on layer twos come, there's going to be a fight for consumers, for wallet users, for transactors on chain. And it's going to come to, like, I bet you most transactions on chain from retail users end up being free because someone's going to subsidize that because that is a competitive advantage.
They should be free.
I'm predicting this with this information. I'm a loosely held prediction. Most transactions from retail end users are just going to be free on layer twos.
Or free, or they might get paid.
They might get paid. That's a different story. That's a different story.
Well, this is really interesting because this is a key element of UX. Imagine the crypto experience right now. Imagine if you were to transfer money from somebody in Venmo, you actually had to have like PayPal stock, portion of PayPal stock to pay that fee to transfer. Like that's bad UX. And so this is working on that problem here. By the way, USDC is now natively on Arbitrum. Well, actually not yet. Sorry. You got to wait 7 days. June 8th, it will be natively on Arbitrum. So it's good news for layer twos as well. David, what is going on here? MoonPay executives pocketed $150 million raised from Series A. Of course, this is the account. Web3 is going just great from our friend Molly
White. Oh, Molly's account.
Yeah, of course it would be her. Hey, Molly, how you doing?
What's up, Molly?
Okay, so what is the story here? What dastardly deed just went on in Web3 again?
MoonPay Insiders CEO Ivan Soto-Wright, and along with others, sold $150 million of their own equity in their Series A raise in 2021. So they MoonPay raised $555 million at a $3.4 billion valuation. And then the founders cashed out $150 million of that right before a crypto crash. Not a good look.
Not great.
Not a good look.
VCs have some responsibility in the kind of their documents and, you know, raises to not let this happen to them. And because if you're an investor, this kind of thing does not feel good. If you just invested in a company and the founders are already exiting before they've seen it through.
Right.
So I guess a little bit like shame on the VCs who also did this too. But also shame on like MoonPay. Like, it's just bad form to do this.
Yeah, it's definitely a if it bleeds, it leads type of headline. Maybe the VCs were okay with it for some particular reason.
Yeah, maybe.
But man, MoonPay was inside of one single bull market. Mm-hmm. As a founder, I would feel bad if I exited inside of the same bull market.
I would exit too.
In the next bull market. That's the social contract.
After you get the thing done and it's really there and it's really built.
Hey, maybe they consider it done.
Paradigm, the most prestigious, one of the better VC companies in crypto, I would say, is broadening its crypto-only focus to areas including AI. So Paradigm just caught the AI bug. Mm-hmm. That's the story here. All right, David, are they abandoning crypto? Is Paradigm done with crypto? What's going on?
So they have changed their bio on Twitter. They've also changed some of their website. So it used to be Paradigm backs disruptive crypto/Web3 companies and protocols, and now it's Paradigm is a research-driven technology investment firm. there was a line, "We believe crypto will define the next few decades," was removed from the homepage, which now makes no mention of Web3 or blockchains. And so the comment from a source for the Block, which wrote an article about this, this change doesn't mean the company is shying away from crypto, but rather highlighting its reach into adjacent areas such as AI. So Paradigm gets the AI bug, changes up their website. And like, why is this news? Because people are talking about it on crypto Twitter. They're like, Paradigm or now grifters. They never were committed to crypto in the first place, blah, 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 blah. What's your take on this, Ryan?
I don't think so. Look, VCs are going to go where the opportunities are for VCs. So, look, if crypto is jealous about that, I don't really understand that take. I guess I will say that there is an element where a lot of investors, though, in general, like the shine has worn off of crypto. Like AI is the new hot thing from an investor perspective, right?
Right.
And I think that there's some opportunity in that because when everyone else, like the best time to actually be looking at AI was probably like 2021. You know what I mean? Like before. But everyone was focused on crypto. Yeah, I think it's kind of a no story. Maybe crypto's feeling a little bitter about being forgotten here.
I think it's right. I think it's exactly that meme of the guy like looking over his shoulder and his girlfriend, the crypto girlfriend, is like, "Who are you looking at?" And the Paradigm's looking at AI. Again, why are we talking about this take? Well, because there's a decent number of people on crypto Twitter who were like up in arms about this. In my mind, this isn't news. Y'all are just bored.
So why are we talking about this? You
know, we're talking about it because other people are talking about it. Last week, 3 weeks ago, people were canceling Bankless. 2 weeks ago, people were canceling Ledger. Now
we're
people are
bored.
Canceling Paradigm because they changed a
bio.
Oh,
people are canceling Paradigm over
Yeah,
this?
This is why this is news. It's like people are trying to cancel Paradigm. It's like, yeah, and they're like, no, this is
You
dumb.
Betrayed us,
this is
Paradigm.
Dumb. Paradigm has like $1 billion that they need to deploy.
Crypto. In crypto, though, there is news. It's layoff season. Binance layoffs. They're calling this a pruning of non-performers, and they have laid off apparently 20% of their workforce. I believe that's correct. They had 8,000 employees.
It's
a lot, right? So 20% down. Also just noticed this week, Nansen Analytics Company, great product they've built, they just laid off 30% of their workforce. So the CEO kind of wrote about this, and this was his take. It's an extremely difficult decision. We announced a reduction of our team by 30%. Two reasons for this. First, we scaled up the team on the back of breakneck growth. It's kind of a whiplash. Crypto was, you know, expanding so fast, you felt like you needed to hire a ton, and now you have to take that off. And this year has been brutal for crypto markets. So I think crypto startups, crypto companies are taking an opportunity to sort of prune and to scale back right now. And that's just the way things are in the bear market. These companies aren't going anywhere. I'm very confident of that. They are just taking some time to kind of prune. Coinbase did this earlier in the year. Like Gemini did this. Kraken did this last year.
All the big companies have laid people off. This is just a normal part of the market cycle. Like there is the layoff phase for every company. And really, like, if you are optimizing for growth and you are not laying people off in the bear market, you haven't picked the correct optimization point.
That's like what Brian Armstrong straight told us with his policy that last time we had him on the podcast.
Like it's sad to see layoffs. It's like an unfortunate headline for the company. But like if you are not laying people off, then you didn't hire enough in the bull market. So this is normal.
Expand, contract. Yes. That's how things grow here. Yes. Speaking of expansion, WorldCoin just getting ready to expand mightily, I think, here. Sam Altman and company raised $115 million for the WorldCoin project. What is the significance of this?
Well, the WorldCoin is really putting rubber down onto pavement. And so they are just ramping up everything. I feel like they think that they are primed to take the next big steps as a company to scan more people's eyeballs, to get more orbs out into the world and actually go from kind of a monolith to more of a modular company, which is part of the whole like WorldCoin.
Every time you say that, scan people's eyeballs with an orb, it can't not sound like dystopian.
It is dystopian. The reason why I'm like comfortable saying those words is because like I have accepted that biometric scanning is a valid attempt to produce Sybil resistance, and once you accept that premise, you understand that then it's like, okay, well, what are you going to scan? Fingerprints? What are you going to scan? Your face? Well, you need to scan something, and the iris is the most Sybil resistant part of your body. So if you accept these assumptions, then you get, okay, we're going to have to scan everyone's
iris. Okay, but think of this. I get that. So technically, this may be the right solution, but think of this. Crypto bros want to go orb you.
The optics are terrible, and that's WorldCoin's
And who
problem.
Is it? Oh, it's the maker of ChatGPT, the most powerful AI on the planet. Wants to be
The orb is this, like, chrome ball that, like, all these WorldCoin employees have a habit of, like, pulling out of their backpack, yeah.
I mean, there could be, you know, all press is good press kind of thing. Like, this is very attention-grabby in a way. I just wonder if it just, you know, segues itself off a cliff rather than actually works. That's my big question right now.
If you're concerned about how the WorldCoin project is going to work or not, you should pay attention to how people are trying to game it. And that is definitely currently underway right now. People are trying to game WorldCoin because like the idea is of WorldCoin, and part of what they're raising money for is that they make building the orb more permissionless, and they also make scanning eyeballs also more permissionless. So you have like orb agents, God, agents.
agents of the orb.
Or agents of the orb who are like not employed by WorldCoin, who are incentivized to go scan people's eyeballs because the protocol pays them to do that. It's like a referral fee. I know this is so
damn. Fucking dystopian, dude. This is not
and, making but then me feel as better? Soon as you incentivize that to happen, well, how are you going to get to 8 billion people? You have to do this in a permissionless, incentive-driven
yeah.
way.
Yeah.
And so like they pay you in WorldCoin to scan people's eyeballs as like a referral fee. And so then people are going to be like, okay, do I need to go scan individuals or can I game the system somehow? And so like people are trying to game the WorldCoin protocol and to, like Sybil attack it. And if it stand, if the WorldCoin protocol stands up to those Sybil attackers who are paid to try to attack the hack the thing and it still works, you got to be bullish on the system. I'm sorry.
I think it's purporting to solve a massive problem. That is the yes. The upside here is yes. right. It's like identity, some kind of an on-chain identity solution. Yeah. But wow,
the branding's not great.
One thing they have to really do is they have to get the privacy maximalists on their side. I think they yes. have to get the decentralization maximalists on their side because they're not going to get the centralizers on their side. You know, the nation state level wants
to.
Of all
the vectors to hate WorldCoin, I think that one is actually the easiest to account for.
What? Which one?
Privacy.
Privacy.
It's pretty easy to not. Then they have all of the like. Here's how we don't collect your data. That's all available and like all, like generally
I think,
accepted
though,
by
you
people.
Have
I respect.
To get people like who are respecting the privacy community to
right.
independently audit this. It can't yes. just be WorldCoin being like we
I
don't
would love,
store anything.
I would love Zuko's take on WorldCoin.
Zuko's
privacy.
Take. Yeah, yeah, a few of the other you know privacy maximalists yeah. we've had on right. Matt owners. From yeah. Hopkins. Remember we had him on
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. the podcast. I would love his yeah. take. Anyway. Interesting. A lot of money. Big war chest mm-hmm. here. And mm-hmm. some major investors coming in, including Blockchain Capital, A16Z, Bain Capital, etc. So mm-hmm. it's definitely a lot of VC firepower here. Speaking of which, Magic just raised mm-hmm. $52 million to grow crypto wallet as a service used by corporate clients like Mattel and Macy's.
Yeah, these guys have been around for a while. They used to be called Fortmatic Wallet, if you remember that, way back
oh, yeah.
when.
Yeah, okay.
These are the
That's
same
who these
people.
Guys are.
I actually
okay.
haven't heard about them in a very long time, but I remember working with them back at my last startup as like, hey, we need wallets for people who don't give a shit about crypto.
Very practical.
Very practical
approach.
Yeah. Very similar to Coinbase's wallet as a service system that they built up. Yeah. So congrats to the Magic people. You guys have been heads down building for a very long time. Very good project.
David, what do we have coming up next?
Coming up next, we got questions from the nation. We're going to talk about Lido's dominance. We're also going to talk about whether or not Ethereum is better or worse because it has a respective and visionary thought leader, Vitalik, of course. Takes of the week and what Ryan and I are bullish on. And then we got a song a day from Song a Day Man. And we will get started with all of that stuff as soon as we talk to some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible. Immutable is at the forefront of Web3 gaming on a mission to bring digital ownership to every player, offering the world's best games and game development platform. Immutable lets game builders and players focus on great gaming experiences. So, build your next Web3 game on easy mode with Immutable's leading full-stack Web3 gaming platform. Its built-in UX features, like the Immutable Passport, are designed for games to scale to the next billion players coming to Web3. With Immutable, players can sign up with an email, pay with a credit card, and experience a frictionless purchase flow inside of games. So, discover your next favorite game and explore a network of 150 games building on Immutable, including such titles as Gozm Chain, Guilds of Guardians, Illuvium, Ember Sword, and Metalcore. So join Web3's largest ecosystem of games and players. Build, play, and connect at immutable.com. Hiring people worldwide, paying them in crypto, providing them access to benefits, it all's so complex. But it doesn't have to be. Complying with labor laws, payroll rules, tax obligations, and crypto regulations in every country that you employ someone is difficult, time-consuming, manual, and costly. And it's drawing more and more attention from regulators and governments. But there is good news. Toku is here. Toku is the first employment and compensation platform for the crypto industry that makes this easy. Toku helps you hire employees or contractors and pay them in fiat or crypto legally, compliantly, and with all the taxes handled in over 100 different jurisdictions. So whether you're an early stage company with just a team of two or you're an enterprise with 200, Toku has a solution that meets your needs. Toku is already working with the leading companies in the space, Protocol Labs, Hedera, Gitcoin, and many more. So transform your employment and token payroll operations with Toku. You can reach out to Toku at toku.com/bankless or click the link in the show notes.
Questions from the nation today. Of course, these are asked in the Bankless Discord, which is available to all Bankless citizens. Here's the question. Given Lido's dominance in staking share and clear intentions not to self-limit their shares, Rocket Pool's DAO did, would it be possible for the Ethereum Foundation to implement a cap on the maximum share any protocol can control? While not ideal, would it be possible to implement a protocol upgrade as a last resort to protect the network from majority control? Blue Furball asks this question. David, what do you think?
So there's two parts of this question that I think are worth pulling out. Would it be possible for the Ethereum Foundation to implement a cap? And then is that cap even possible at all? So EIPs come from many different places. Whether or not the Ethereum Foundation has deemed it appropriate to actually push and promote an EIP, EIPs are discovered more emergently. Like the Ethereum Foundation didn't push 4844. Dankrad and Proto Lambda, who's now on Optimism, these people came up with Dank sharding and then pushed that. So like, I'll just throw an objection to the idea that the Ethereum Foundation is implementing.
I would say
a
they
cap.
Can. I mean, you have to get like client devs on board right. as well. I mean, you get
it can,
is outside
it can
of the
come
Ethereum
from
Foundation.
EF researchers. So if like Dankrad and Justin Drake came to consensus about an EIP, then yeah, that came from the EF. But it
they
really
are
came
influential.
Out from, yes, and they are in the EF. So like semantics here. But the bigger question is like, can we implement a cap? And that answer is no, we cannot.
Yeah.
Because the Ethereum beacon chain does not actually know what is an entity and what is a solo staker. It doesn't have information about who is what. And so that is a subjective thing. That is something external to the protocol. So it's not actually possible. How would you determine who's got what ether where? The Ethereum protocol is not aware of that fact. There's no way to actually enforce decentralization at the protocol layer. That's part of the layer zero.
So I think there was actually discussion this week, a lot of discussion on Lido this week,
yeah.
You know, and some concern about the share of the market. It's right. over 30%. I don't know if it's right. like 33%, 36%, somewhere in that range.
It's in the 60%.
No. It's
yeah.
not that high.
Yeah.
As what are you saying? Is a proportion of total ETH staked?
Of liquid staked ether. Of
okay,
LSD.
Liquid
yes.
staked ether, yes.
Yeah,
yeah. But total ETH staked, it's closer
correct.
To the low 30s.
Yeah.
And that's what protocol like designers are really mostly concerned
sure.
about is the total yeah. proportion here. And if it gets over one third versus two thirds,
yeah.
you know, like there are different bad things that can possibly happen. Danny Ryan wrote a great post about this mm-hmm. this week, which you might refer you to as well. So there's cause to be concerned, but the remedy is on the social layer,
right.
I think right now it's basically people saying, hey, don't stake with Lido. They
right.
have too much stake.
So interestingly enough, it's also where the problem arises because Lido is explicitly a monopolistic DAO. They have explicitly stated, no, our goal is to be the staking provider. We will not self-cap because that's antagonistic to our vision for ourselves, which is to be the most decentralized staking as a service protocol.
But don't you think Ethereum needs to be resistant to that? So people often compare it to Prismatic, right?
Yeah.
And they say, well, you know, Prism took fantastic steps to sort of self-limit their own growth. And there was a time where they were like 70% of the Beacon Chain client, right? And mm-hmm. kind of growing. And now they're back down to like, what, 30 to 40%?
Mm-hmm.
What's different though with Prism versus this is there's no profit incentive
right.
for Prismatic to
right.
increase in market share. In fact, right. it would only cause more hassle for them. I mean, I remember we talked to Preston Van Loon after, and Terrence from Prismatic after the Ethereum Finality event, and they were like, thank God there were other clients. It's like, it puts the burden
yeah.
off of us.
Yeah,
right?
Lido does not say, thank God there's Rocket Pool.
Exactly.
Lido looks at Rocket Pool and be like, I want your staked ETH.
Okay.
Put it in my vault.
So what do we do about
right.
this? Is it a problem? What do we do about this? My answer for what we do about this is like level up.
Right.
We have to have some staking competitors that are competitive with Lido mm-hmm. and win the old fashioned way, which is a competitive tool set
right.
That people want to stake with.
Mm-hmm.
It's not happened yet, which is so maybe that's a bit like hand wavy.
Right.
Do you have a better answer?
Yeah, there's plenty of staking as a service DAOs coming on to the scene. So there's competition available. The supply of competition coming into the market is that's not a problem. Many people would like to start and are starting staking as a service orgs, some differentiated, some not. Really, the big answer is we need solo stakers. So there was the rated.network report that came out that there was 6.5% of validators on Ethereum are solo stakers, which sounds like a small number, and maybe it is. But remember, 6.5% are these like ultimate hardliners who will not compromise the Ethereum till I die, go down with the ship. These are these type of people. And having, you only need a minority of those to make sure the Ethereum is protected. There's still the concern of like anything above 30% is bad. The Lido apologists will say, well, Lido itself is a decentralized org. It wants to be decentralized even more than it already is.
It's taking steps, to be fair.
Then the other the further Lido apologists will just point at Rocket Pool and say, hey, that community that the Rocket Pool just wants is mad at Lido because Rocket Pool wants that ether too.
Because they're in second place.
Right. Granted, the culture around Rocket Pool is healthier for Ethereum. So if Rocket Pool had more and Lido had less, I would say that that would be objectively better for Ethereum. But you also have to be aware of the incentives for Rocket Pool in that community. Everyone wants to take down Lido. Is the layer zero that is going to be the thing that protects Ethereum. And so this is why anytime Lido shifts into having too much control, you're going to get just like natural pushback from a nebulous set of participants with their own individual incentives. I will say, like, going back to my first point, though, making solo staking easier is going to always be the best answer. Yeah, there's so much work to do with making, and that's really what the EF should be doing, is making GUIs for solo stakers. So like if you have to, as a solo staker, touch the command line, that's bad, and that's we should not have that. And we should fix that. And that's going to be a much better solution.
I think so too. I think so too. But the layer zero is trying all sorts of things, including shame. Right?
Shame. Which is shame.
Layer zero strategy.
Lido, right? Stop being so monopolistic.
Well, it's shaming Lido, but also shaming people who stake with Lido. And
yes,
that is a stick that layer zero can use. We got to have better stick. We got to have better carrots and sticks than that.
Do we own any staked ETH at Bankless? Or do we only own our ETH? We don't own any our ETH, but we run many.
You're talking about Lido staked ETH?
Lido staked ETH, yeah.
We don't own it at Bankless.
But we do run Rocket Pool mini pools.
Yes. Are you trying to virtue signal?
Yes.
David just slipped that in there. Yes. Just virtue signaling.
We're doing our part.
All right. Here's a question from Knas. Here's a question from Knas. What effect do you think it has on the evolution of a specific chain? The fact that Ethereum has a clear, respected, and visionary thought leader, Vitalik, of course, compared to Bitcoin, that has none really. What do you think about that? So Satoshi did the white paper thing.
Right.
He's there for a little bit. He participated on various internet forums and then disappeared.
Right.
Vitalik, he founded this thing, created the white paper, has not disappeared, has been active in shepherding this, I think, in a decentralized leader type of way. So it's very different from the model of a CEO. But still, he has not abandoned the project. He's been working on it, even though most of the other Ethereum co-founders did sort of abandon Ethereum in the early days.
Very quickly, yeah.
And I didn't honestly know what Vitalik would do, whether he would kind of stick with it or whether he'd do the Satoshi thing. Anyway, the question is, what effect do you think this has had on Ethereum?
I am grateful that Vitalik is the leader that he is. The Bitcoiners will point to Vitalik and be like, look how centralized Ethereum is. Whatever Vitalik says goes. To some degree, like whatever Vitalik says goes isn't wrong, but it's not in the way that they're saying it is. They're saying like, yeah, like Vitalik is this dictator of Ethereum. It's like his way or the highway. The only things that Vitalik feels strongly about are like the right things to feel strongly. He's just right. He's like the right leader. And I say that as somebody who's like,
you follow Vitalik more like you might follow like Gandhi, for instance. It's not like top down. It's more
the Bitcoiners are gonna love that one.
You know what I mean? But seriously though, there's an element of like, there's some spiritual leadership here.
He's earned it
though.
Right. And his track record is proven. Now, as somebody who spent the last 2 months with Vitalik and Zuzalu in Montenegro, I can tell you he's doing many other things that are not Ethereum. and so he is a leader of across industries, across technologies. And so, like, Ethereum is not... The guy
it's not
is
his full-time job anymore.
The guy's a guy. Like, he's not the leader of Ethereum. He's Vitalik. Also, he has philosophical directions for about how Ethereum should be developed and stuff. But, yeah, he's living a life. And some of it happens to be concerned about Ethereum, and other things he's concerned about, like network states and longevity and public goods. So,
The question of, has this had an effect on Ethereum? Undoubtedly so. In fact, I would say Ethereum would not be where it is if the leader kind of went, you know, MIA after the white paper or after Ethereum 1.0, right? It really needed some shepherding leadership. And I'm kind of reminded, you know, I'm a sucker for like founding, you know, America type of things, right? Founding fathers, after they wrote the Constitution, they didn't just like yeet out of there, right?
Right.
I mean, they were still, even Washington won the Revolutionary War, served as president for a period of time. The country kind of needed that. There were a lot of questions that the original Constitution didn't solve. And so you needed a Bill of Rights, and so you needed to hash things out, and like the Federalist Papers and all of these things. If the founders of the United States just left after the first white paper of America was shipped, this would have been a complete mess. It took some time to sort all these things out. And I think the same is happening with Ethereum. It's more complicated than Bitcoin, too.
Yeah, right. Bitcoin had the luxury of being simple enough where the founder could just leave and it'd be okay. Ethereum was not that and is not that, and needed that guidance from the people who are philosophically and ideologically aligned.
I still think Bitcoin needs it, too.
Well, that's a different story. the best leadership that I see Vitalik doing, and that I know actually works, is when he writes articles titled Legitimacy on his blog post, and that article becomes cited in startups' reasons for existing. I've seen the Vitalik Legitimacy post cited in like Dex more than most other like articles that I've read. And that's just leading in this very like passive, like low touch way that still steers an entire ecosystem.
Yeah.
I don't know if we answered the question, but I think we gave the content that the question asked for.
Yes, Vitalik was necessary. Yes, it massively influenced Ethereum. No, it wouldn't have gotten here without a Vitalik or someone like him. Yeah. And I do think he is actually a fairly unique type of leader in history. Yes. A lot of leaders kind of grab power and they tend to keep it. And he's gone in the other direction. Vitalik is much less necessary for Ethereum to succeed today than he was 5 years ago. In fact... I think at this point, if Vitalik left, Ethereum would be totally
fine. That would have been true a number of years ago. The last few times I've introduced Vitalik on the podcast, I've introduced him as Vitalik, the guy that holds the record for the most ignored EIPs, proposed EIPs. And it's true. EIPs are ignored.
Huh. That's interesting. We should delve into the ignored ones. Maybe there's some good ideas.
That
there.
Is some niche content. So I don't know.
Yeah, I not understand it. All right, let's get to some takes of the week. We got one big one from Kobe. So Kobe, on opportunity, how do you win during the bear market, David? What do you do? Mm-hmm. This is the season that we're in. We've called it kind of the apathy market. Kobe had some advice, and I think he said this. Sometime in maybe 2021,
in the bull market, at the peak. Yeah.
So when everyone was drunk, and look at this these podcast participants. Do you recognize some of these faces here?
Van Spencer, Suzu. I don't know who the others are.
Okay. Like some bull market content people. Anyway,
this is pre the 3 hours capital demise.
Let's play the clip.
You think the majority of people that don't make it are the people that lose interest between bull markets, like people that have known about it from so far back who still haven't made it? It's because they, as soon as it gets frothy, it gets to the bull market, they rebuy the all-time high breakout. So they rebought at like 20K and they play the bull market. They like, they're a little bit naturally bearish, and the bear market hits and they stay interested for about a year. And then towards the tail end, like late 2018, 2019, they just naturally lose interest and they go, oh, this shit's over, I've got life commitments, whatever. And then they get back involved when it starts getting frothy again, and those are the people that are not going to make it. So if there is one piece of advice that I can give, is like, find a way to remain the same level of interest that you have now, when you check the chart every day, you like lose sleep over your positions, whatever the fuck you're doing, you over-leveraged apes. Like, you need to have the same level of interest when everything's really boring. Because right now, it's like everyone's interested, right? Like, my parents are like super in, like, what shall I buy? My friends from school way back when are hitting me up saying, is Cardano good? And whatever. But none of those people are interested in the bottom. None of those people are interested when it's going sideways for 6 months. And if you tell those people at the bottom in the 6 month sideways, now's the time, they fucking ignore you. They're like, nah, it seems a bit risky. Like, it's not for me. I'll look at it later. And then they hit you up in January of this year, like, is it too late to get in, by the way? And you're like, no, just immediately market buy. It's like 25K or something. It's 30K. And they're like, I'm going to wait for a dip. And at 60K, they're like, is it too late to market buy like you said? And you're like, bro, I have no advice for you anymore. I told you at 4K to buy. I told you like 6K to buy. I told you at 7K to buy. So the main way you have to make it is try and perpetuate your interest through the boring bit. The boring bit is where the opportunity is, when all these moon boys and all the marketers and all the LARPers, they disappear from Twitter and they don't participate anymore. Their accounts just stop tweeting. That's the bit where you're supposed to be interested and you're supposed to be taking your like next 3 years of positions. Most people that don't make it, they stick around for the fun bit. That's it. Stick around for the boring bit.
There it is, David. Yep. So try to maintain your interest during the boring bit. This is the boring bit. Let me ask you, how do you maintain your interest and how have you done it in previous bore markets?
Yeah, in 2019 was the last bore market that we had. It's when I was felt like I was taking crazy pills, man. It's like Uniswap got invented. DAI was growing like crazy. Compound was being utilized and no one was talking about it. And the advice that I have is like, there is going to be similarly exciting innovations that are granted going to be more complex because we're one more cycle, more mature. But there's going to be things that excite you that you're looking around and no one else is getting excited. And you're like, why the F not? Now, if you're good at this game, if you're a good investor, if you're good at playing the crypto world, you will understand, and if you have identified it correctly, you'll understand that that's alpha and you're not taking crazy pills. I felt like I was taking crazy pills for a whole entire year, if not longer. But that this is where you have to understand, like, no, you're the smart one. You are paying attention when other people are not. And the looking for alpha is actually easier. So long as you understand that, like, yes, people aren't going to be excited about this thing for maybe a frustratingly long amount of time. But so long as you see the vision and you have identified opportunity, that this is the year to do it. And we were talking about like the bore market incoming at the end of 2022. It's like first we're punched in the face bear market, and now we're having the bull market. And here we are. We've arrived. And so now it's a matter of like, hey, this is where you actually make millions of dollars next bull market if you identify the opportunities.
You have to, in order to do this though. Okay. So I think Kobe's advice is so salient around do whatever it takes to stay interested, right? Okay. So realize that during the bull market, your brain was actually rewired for dopamine hits. Yeah. Every time you checked price, on your phone, your app, and the price went up, boom, dopamine hit. Where's it going to go next, right? Oh, it's down a little bit. But boom, big increase again. And you're looking at your net worth and you're like, wow, this is amazing, isn't it?
So every time I refresh, it goes up.
You got hooked on the dopamine. So you consumed all this crypto content. Now that dopamine is all gone, all right? So you have to get your hit. Like your brain wants chemical hits from something and you have to get it from something else, all right? Where you can get it, at least for me, it's been doing stuff, building something, learning about something, trying a new DeFi protocol, trying a new wallet, like learning about ZK machine learning or some sort of obscure, obscure topic, and then maybe making content about it. If you have dev skills, obviously you build something, right? If you don't have dev skills, if you have other kind of softer skills, then you're writing, researching, you're doing all sorts of things to keep yourself busy, and you have to get the chemical hit that way instead. So you have to really rewire your brain. And I think if you stay here and if you can maintain your interest, then as David, you just said, like there's benefit on the other side of that, but you have to sort of trick your brain into it because you've been addicted to the dopamine price hits. It's no longer present anymore. You got to get it from somewhere else.
You know what's a great source of dopamine, Ryan?
What's that?
is when all of the things that you thought were true come true and turns into $1 million because you stuck it out through the bear market. That's a nice source of dopamine.
Yeah, but it's not instant, is it? It takes some time. And
first takes the crazy pills section. You have to feel like you're taking crazy pills.
Yep.
And that's how you know you're onto something.
That's where we are. All right. What else we got? Another take of the week. This is yours.
This is me. So here's my take. Actually, not a take, it's a question. Do y'all think that I can get Ryan to sign up for another weekly show? And so here's my idea for the show. 35 minutes long on Wednesdays, 5 minutes for the intro. And then we talk about what we're going to talk about. And then 15 minutes, I teach you about something. And then another 15 minutes, you teach me about something. That's the
like
show.
Like anything? It's just... Yeah. Not crypto, just you come and you teach me something and I teach you something.
I would imagine that the listeners would enjoy it if it were to be about crypto, because we did just talk about figuring out ways to stay interested in crypto during the bull market. but there is no requirement that it is about crypto. Yes, correct.
Are you trying to get, like, is this a side way to get the food podcast in here? You're going to come with, like, nutrition lessons every
World
week?
War II podcast? I don't know. Could be anything.
I mean, look. So the hardest thing for me is just finding time to do a recording, David. As you know,
we carve out the time, and anyone else who needs a meeting in that time can F off.
Really? So we just carve out dedicated time every week to do this?
We just carve out dedicated time for another show.
Stop doing other meetings. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, one question I would have for the Bankless Nation is, would they be interested in this? For me, one thing that gives me the dopamine hits is when we get feedback from these shows, right. When people are actually interested, when we get like viewers on our shows, and when I like hear feedback that, hey, like, great episode, you know,
product market fit,
that's the kind of thing. So a signal for this would be if we heard from Bankless listeners that this kind of show format was interesting. Maybe they get too much content from us already, David. I don't know, man. Don't we do like 3 to 4 podcasts a week, every single freaking week? And we're talking about adding another one here?
I remember when, it was the weekly roll-up, which was the third show that we layered on. First, we did the Monday podcast, and then I was like, Ryan, we need to do a weekly like news show to cover this event that's happening. So we layered on State of the Nation, and then I was like, Ryan, we're only covering one weekly news thing. We need to recover the entire week news, so let's do the weekly roll-up. But that was like 2 years ago. We've been doing these three podcasts for like 2 years
now.
I think it's time for another podcast. And I think if you pull up this tweet that I just sent you in Zoom, ETH Wave put it nicely. David learns something. Ryan learned something, and I learned 2 things. Sounds like a good deal to me.
There you go. Well, I want to hear what the Bankless Nation thinks. Let me mull that over, David. I can't. Cool. I can't give you an answer on the spot.
Can't commit.
You know. I can't commit on the spot. You know, I'm naturally breaks anyway. But I will say, to your credit, I did think that the podcast was a bad idea in the beginning. I did also think that adding the weekly roll-up was a bad idea. And weekly roll-up has become like
the cornerstone of this podcast.
It's been my favorite. I enjoy it. Like this gives me energy. Sometimes it's hard to kind of get your head around all the topics, but I enjoy these little chats we have. So I don't want to discount this. Tell me what you're bullish on this week, though, my friend.
So I know we just came out of, how do you maintain interest during the bull market? My strategy is to invest time and energy into something completely different so that when you do have time for crypto, you make it in very intentional and you go very deep rather than just getting like scrolling through crypto Twitter.
So you don't have to talk about the meme coins if you don't want to, that kind of
thing. Yes, exactly. You're free to ignore what you consider noise and just tap into intentional stuff. Anyways, so I'm bullish on climbing mountains.
What?
completely unrelated.
Mountains. Actual not mountains. Outside the metaverse mountains.
So in 1 month time, you'll be doing 2 weekly roll-ups with Anthony Sozzano.
Oh, my God.
I will be in the middle of mountains in Washington, Mount Rainier and Mount Baker. And then at the end of ETHCC, I've signed up to climb the Matterhorn, which, by the way, is verifiably insane thing to do, to sign up to climb the Matterhorn while having done 0 mountains before, which is why I have to go
like,
to 2 other
insane,
mountains.
Insane, also dangerous, question mark?
On the risk spectrum, yes, I would say. Yeah.
Everything's on the risk spectrum. How far on the risk spectrum is this? Everest.
Everest is 26,000 feet. The Matterhorn is 15,000 feet. Okay. Just judging a mountain by feet is
you can't do that,
a very imprecise picture. Look at how fucking steep that thing is, dude.
I mean, are you sure?
You see the ridge that is on the right side?
I don't want to do this podcast solo, David.
Yeah, I know. Well, not only is it your co-host, but it's also a very integral member of the Bankless team as well. So it's two of us. So, hey, you know, if we both go down, like, yeah, you might as well just fold the thing.
Oh, my God. Wow. This is great. This is great news. I'm excited for you. So, what kind of training goes into this?
I've been going to the gym twice a day for the past week or so, ever since I got back from
Montenegro. Just starting that training.
I was running around in Montenegro. Now I have 50 pounds on my backpack on a stair stepper, which, let me tell you, is extremely boring.
My God, though.
Makes crypto very interesting.
You can listen to some podcasts while you do it, though, right?
That's exactly what I did. That's exactly right. Yeah.
Wow. Uh-huh. Well, this looks crazy. I would never attempt something like this, and I'm also proud of you. But also,
hold on. Don't be proud of me. I haven't done it yet.
Okay, but just even trying to attempt this is crazy.
We'll see if I can actually get it halfway up the mountain. But that's what I'm very, very excited about.
All right.
I don't know how to get exposure to mountains, but if I could, I would.
No bore market for David. He's going to climb the Matterhorn.
Matterhorn, yeah.
That's incredible, man.
Right. What are you bullish on, Ryan?
It's nothing nearly as exciting. Something about crypto. Is that okay?
Wait, what?
It's restaking. So we did this episode with Sriram, who is kind of the father of restaking. He's the founder of this protocol called EigenLayer. We recorded that earlier this week. It comes out on Monday. Got me really excited about restaking. At least excited, probably 80% excited, 20% concerned. Word.
Yeah,
which is always the most interesting type of podcast. And I feel like restaking will either hit product market fit and it'll be absolutely massive, or it won't, right? But if it does, it'll be a really big deal. So this, to me, restaking is potentially as big as layer twos were for scaling decentralization, okay? And it's as big as MEV was in terms of the challenges presented to the protocol and protocol research. It really changes the incentive game. And to me, it's as big as maybe the merge or something like it for the value of ETH, the asset. So you combine all of these things and man, restaking is like this massive rabbit hole that I feel like we'll be journeying on, not just now, but in the years to come. That again is if it hits, if it achieves product market fit, and I think there's more than a fair chance it will. So this is something I think that if you want to learn about Ethereum and you want to know about crypto, this is probably the newest frontier to go explore. So I anticipate this first episode will be one of many that we actually do on restaking. In fact, we're talking about doing a panel with Sriram and some of the protocol researchers as well, and you know, and talking about this further. So I'm bullish on it, but like, scared bullish on restaking is what I would say. Maybe the same way you're bullish about climbing the Matterhorn. I hope you're a little like
if
cautiously
you're not a little
fearful.
Bit scared, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. I feel the same, except from the comfort of my home.
The scariness can stay inside of the computer. Yeah. The investable surface area around restaking is significant. I mean, it's as large as layer two, like you said.
So. It's gonna change the game. Gonna change the game, I think.
Thank you for making this section about crypto.
Yeah, you're welcome. Meme of the week. We have no meme of the week, but we do have something special for you guys. And this is a Moment of Zen song. So, full disclosure ahead, a lot of language in the next song here that you're about to hear. I think it's worth it because it's exactly how I feel. Like, we've got to stop sending our money to randos on the internet who are just going to scam us. I feel justified in playing this song. This is a song by Song Day Man that we're about to hear. Yeah. So let's play that. I'm going to get to risks and disclaimers and then stick around for that. Of course, got to let you know, none of this has been financial advice. Crypto is risky. You could lose what you put in, but we are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the bankless journey. Thanks a lot.
Stop sending fucking money randomly to assholes. Stop sending fucking money randomly to assholes. Stop sending fucking money, random fucking money. Stop sending fucking money, random fucking money. People say crypto's a scam and you all prove them right. Or the shadow part of money is not just out in the light. Either way, I'm disappointed and I'm feeling fucking sick. Cause the talented are starving while the idiots get rich. Stop sending fucking money, random fucking money. Stop sending fucking money, random fucking money. Stop sending fucking money, random fucking money. Stop sending fucking money. Stop sending fucking money, your fucking money. Stop sending fucking money, your fucking money.